Welcome to Reading the Grid with Erin and Ina. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. The 2025 São Paulo Grand Prix weekend at Interlagos delivered pure F1 chaos. Unpredictable weather, dramatic clashes, and major championship consequences. Lando Norris once again came out on top, winning both the sprint and the Grand Prix to extend his lead to 24 points over teammate Oscar Piastri and 49 over Max Verstappen. McLaren looked dominant from the start, but it was far from a smooth weekend for the former championship leader, as Piastri's race unraveled after contact with Mercedes rookie Kimi Antonelli. That triggered a chain reaction with Charles Leclerc, earning Piastri a costly time penalty that dropped him out of podium contention.
The sprint on Saturday hinted at the pace McLaren would carry into the main event, despite Oscar Piastri crashing out and handing 8 points to his closest rival. With Norris untouchable out front and Verstappen struggling after setup issues and an engine penalty that forced him to start Sunday's race from the pit lane. Ferrari's weekend began with promise in the sprint and a glimmer of hope for Leclerc, who achieved P3 in qualifying, but quickly spiraled out of control, as both Leclerc and Hamilton found themselves in the wrong place at the wrong time once the lights went out on the race day.
Sunday's Grand Prix was a roller coaster, and while Norris cruised to victory, Verstappen delivered a comeback for the ages, storming from the pit lane to finish third after four pit stops and a puncture, and he earned a very well-deserved driver of the day. But the real headline belonged to Kimi Antonelli, who claimed a stunning P2 finish. His brilliant drive was tempered only by his involvement with the early collision with Piastri and Leclerc, which ended Leclerc's race and left Ferrari completely empty-handed. It was a defining weekend. Dominance for McLaren, redemption for Verstappen, a breakout for Antonelli, and disaster for Ferrari. And based on all of that, Ina, it's really kind of hard to figure out who won our hearts, but you want to give it a try?
Sure, I agree. It's very hard for, I think, for us. So the top three all produced something special. So, of course, Lando Norris had a spectacular weekend where he topped every session, pulled away well in every standing and rolling start. And for him, that's a huge accomplishment.
What is it called when they, is it the Grand Slam?
I
Because
think
he
so.
had pole, won the sprint, pole, won the race. Although he didn't, well, I guess technically not, because he didn't lead
He didn't.
every lap of the race.
He didn't, and he also didn't
Okay.
have the fastest lap.
True. Okay. All right.
But I have to say, he even topped FP1, which m mattered not, but just for the heck of it, he did.
True. Okay. Pretty
So,
impressive.
very impressive. So, Kimi Antonelli had a stellar weekend where he showed consistency throughout the sprint and the race and qualified and finished every session in P2. Ahead of his teammate on a track that he never drove or even tested before. He would have probably won my heart on a different weekend, but I cannot condone him crashing out another driver, even though it was not completely his fault, especially when that driver is my favorite. And finally, Max Verstappen had a phenomenal drive from the pits to P3, which unfortunately is the opposite trajectory of Charles Leclerc, but it is arguable if it was better than his drive last year from P17 to P1. Gianpiero Lambiasi, Max's engineer, implied that it was better than 2024, but I'm not sure I agree. Granted, this year he did not benefit from red flags and had to deal with a puncture, but he still got a benefit of pitting under a safety car. And, which for me is equally important, he changed his entire car, which is the reason he started from the pit lane and not P16, where he qualified. Last year, he did take an engine penalty, which is why he started in P17, but he did not change the setup that wasn't working for him in the qualifying, and he had to perform better in the rain.
I'm very excited to talk about this a little bit later, but did you see that a team, I think McLaren, because he changed the power unit, and I forget for whatever the reason was this go around, they're trying to see if Red Bull went over the budget cap.
Yeah, so I actually looked into it. It's basically you can change a power unit to replace a completely unusable power unit. And yes, you still get the grid penalty, but you also can use funds outside of the cost cap to cover
Oh,
for
okay.
that unit. However, if you take an extra power unit, not because your existing power unit is damaged, just to add performance, that has to come out of the cost cap.
And
So
that's why
that's
they
what,
did this for performance, right?
well, that's what McLaren wants to clarify. So that's
Okay.
why they asked FIA, did they take this out of their cost cap, outside of the cost cap? Because McLaren believes they did not take an extra engine because of issues with the engine units that Max has at his disposal. It's more for performance.
Performance. Interesting. That could get. All right, I'm curious to see what that results in.
Exactly. As for the rest of the grid, there were some impressive drives, but not enough to win my heart. So I will give it to the second best driver's parade this year. The tiny cars, or maybe they're called mini cars, they were adorable, whatever they're called. They had the driver's names on the side. And except for Sauber, each team got one car per team. So they had two drivers per tiny car. So can you imagine, especially poor Ollie Bearman and Esteban
That's not
Ocon
good.
had
The
to
two
fit into one tiny
6 foot
car?
tall drivers. This is also what won my heart, so I'm really excited to talk about the driver's parade because it was a highlight of the weekend for sure.
Exactly. So this is the time at which we also mentioned when the Lego parade in
Oh,
Miami stole
I
our cars.
loved that one.
Yeah, the drivers turn into little kids, and this is the only time where all of them were so happy, including Lance Stroll. He smiled, Aaron. He smiled.
I saw. He has a great
Yeah.
smile.
So there were a lot of endearing highlights. One of my favorites was with Alex Albon and Carlos Sainz coming down and realizing that whoever got to the car first got to drive it. So Alex started running. Carlos grabbed his sleeve, trying to hold him back, but Alex got away. He chose the right side, the driver's side, and so he was the one who drove. And then Carlos Sainz did like a very interesting contortions in the back of the car just to fit in. So that whole video is perfect. The other highlight, I think, is when Mercedes' car broke down and George Russell ended up riding in a Red Bull. So Yuki Tsunoda was driving, Max was sitting on one end, and then Russell managed to fit his very big frame into that tiny little car. And hilariously, there's a video where you can just hear Max's voice when they pulled and saw that Mercedes was broken down. And Max says, "We don't have room."
I'm not
So,
surprised by that because the two love each other so very much.
oh yeah, we'll get to their lovey-dovey relationship in Words of Wisdom. But it's interesting. So Kimi did not join them. He actually joined Hülkenberg, and Hülkenberg got his own car, I think, because Bartoletto got his own car since he's the Brazilian driver
Hometown
and
hero.
we're in
Makes
Brazil.
sense. Yeah.
Another car that broke down was Aston Martin. I mean, that Mercedes engine cannot even power the tiny or mini cars. But that one was cute because both Alonso and Stroll caught the ride in the McLaren. So we had Alonso, Stroll, Norris, and Piastri all in one tiny little car. And which is just a cute visual. But I just want to mention one interesting thing because remember when we were discussing the Lego parade, I was wondering how did they pick who drove first? Like, we know how they do it in Williams. Apparently, they run for it. What's interesting about Lando Norris is that he got to the car first and he got in the back. So he immediately made the decision that it's going to be Oscar Piastri who drove, which I thought was
Aw,
interesting.
yeah.
Another highlight for me was when Haas, with Ocon driving, drove into Racing Bulls. Lawson was driving, and Hadjar was just screaming hysterically. I mean, he was laughing, but it was
It
just
was so
very
hard
hysterical.
not to crack up with
Oh
Hadjar laughing like that.
my God, she was just having a ball. And finally, Aaron, this was the one and only time during the weekend when both of our drivers were happy.
And
So,
smiling and
yeah.
in a car that worked and was
Yeah.
moving.
Well, it was so funny because so Leclerc got in the driver's seat. Again, he got to the car first, and Lewis was draped in the Brazilian flag, and they were trying, F1 was trying to interview Leclerc, but he just wanted to go and race. So he just floored it, and he managed. I don't think they were first, but I think they were second. They did cut the grass, which is hilarious because us Williams also cut. Like they found an escape road and they totally took it. Like it's just so funny how much they would cheat if they're given the chance.
Oh, I know. Well, I loved it. There was so much joy. It was so fun to see them revert back to being kids. It's just enjoyable.
It is enjoyable. And I thought, okay, this is the beginning. The race is going to be amazing. And it was very entertaining, but not necessarily for all the best reasons. So,
No, but you want to talk about the breaking of our hearts?
well, I don't know if you want to pick up the slack for Ferrari because I just can't talk more about them than I already have. It's just so painful. But you can argue that Bortoleto's weekend was abysmal. I mean, he
Oh,
crashed at the end of the sprint.
that was such a horrific crash to watch, too.
Yes, his car could not be rebuilt in time for qualifying, although they tried. Like, he even put a helmet
Oh, I
ready to
know
get
those
in.
mechanics got him in the car. I was like, wow, kudos to them.
Yeah, they got close, but
Yeah.
eventually he had to start. Well, he had to start P20th, but he didn't because of Ocon and Max Verstappen taking the engine penalties and starting from the pit lane. But in any case, it didn't matter because he crashed that right away and he collided with Stroll, and that one was definitely on him. And so on the one hand, he had his entire family comforting him in the pits, and the crowd was extremely supportive. But on the other hand, I did not like the fact that he never thanked his team for rebuilding the car for the race.
Yeah, that was
And
a bad deal. They work really hard.
they work really hard, and it's understandable. He had so many emotions going on. Again, this is the track he never drove or tested before, and it's Brazil,
It's his home
his
race.
home.
Yeah,
So
that's
there's
tough.
a lot of factors, but I just thought it's kind of a given. Like you always thank the mechanics for rebuilding the car, and he didn't.
My guess is because he's a rookie and not a ton of experience, I'm sure their PR team coached him on what to say. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that that wasn't malicious. It was probably just a very unfortunate oversight because those mechanics worked really hard and should have been given some appreciation by him.
I agree, but I have to say, so I've been watching now, this is my second full year watching. I do not remember one driver except Bortoleto not ever thanking his mechanics for rebuilding the car.
Yeah, it's really.
Ever.
It's
Like
really
any.
bad. Yeah.
Yes. So that's why it's so jarring. Otherwise, I would have probably not even noticed it. The other one who broke my heart a little is
Your favorite
Kimi
rookie?
Antonelli. He's on thin ice right now. So Kimi Antonelli took out Charles Leclerc. Again, you can argue that the Oscar Piastri contributed to it, and we will definitely unpack more in the words of wisdom because I think Charles Leclerc had a very measured take on this and put the blame where it belonged. But I just feel like Kimi is on a dangerous ground with me. He has now taken out Leclerc twice in a race. So if he does it the third time, this is it for me. And I
Three
think even
strikes, you're
if
out.
Yeah, and I think even Tifosi will not care that he is an Italian.
I'm going to agree with you there. I think that's tricky.
Yeah. So finally, so the person who broke my heart is going to be someone who I've never included before, and that is Yuki Tsunoda.
We're aligned on this one completely.
So I understand he's an afterthought at Red Bull. He's probably on his way out, but his treatment by the team at the race or before the race was atrocious. And this is after he already was the beneficiary of a 12-second pit stop in Mexico, for which, again, Laurent Mackey apologized. So it started with his team not sending anyone to pick him up from the airport.
Oh my God, that
So
video footage was so pitiful.
he looked incredibly lost, which I understand if you expect somebody to pick him up. But again, logistics snafus happen. Not a big deal. Obviously, would never happen to Max. Also, he has his own plane. But then Red Bull used Yuki's setup for Max's car in qualifying. So for the first time, Aaron, They had the same car, finally the same parts and the same setup. And you know what happened? They both ended up out of Q1 in P6 and P19, respectively. Obviously, Yuki is a P19. But the difference between them, which I thought was interesting, was only 3/10 of a second apart. And 3/10 is the measure of the
Right.
teammates. Like, if you're more than 3/10, then you shouldn't be a teammate. So that seems acceptable, especially since the difference between Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris in Q3 was more than that. So you think, okay, so now they have the same setup. It seems like the gap is not as big as it usually seems. So what do? Max gets completely new car. Like, everything was new. Like, as he said to Gabriel Bartoletto before the tiny or mini car parade, everything was changed. What did Yuki get? Promotion to P17 because both Max and Ocon took penalties and started from the pit lane. I don't understand why they didn't give Yuki something new. I understand maybe the power unit, especially if they had to give it within the cost cap. Obviously, they're not going to spend that money on Yuki, but he can't, could they have changed the setup? Something.
My guess is
Because
they didn't because they are out of the McLaren's already secured the constructor. Red Bull's not in the hunt for it. Yuki is nowhere close to the drivers' championship. Max is in contention. It is pretty obvious that they have just clearly they've always favored Max, but there is it's like Yuki's hanging out to dry. There is no support, which is wrong.
well, they do want constructors, actually. So, in case you missed it, Ferrari is number P4
Four,
and
I know.
constructors, and Red Bull
Yeah.
is third. So, they actually want second. And Max even confirmed that, I mean, I don't think he ever
Mathematically, are
cares.
they possible to get second?
Yes, they're all
Oh.
very. So, between Red Bull and Ferrari, I think it's only 4 points. And between Red Bull and Mercedes, don't quote me on that, but it's less than 20. My
Okay.
point is, look,
All
maybe
right,
not
so
Las
second is still up
Vegas.
for grabs. So then
Yeah.
my point, you totally, I get it. I take back what I said, but then why aren't they doing anything to help Yuki?
I think they're exactly. No, that's a great question. I don't know. I think they've really, like, look, there's only so much focus you can have on a team, I guess. And for them, it's Max is such a priority that it really does, like, it's almost like the second driver doesn't exist to emphasize that fact. So then Yuki collided with Lance Stroll, by the way.
Oh,
How many people collided with Lance Stroll in this race? This is
I
like the
lost
second time.
count. At least
But
he made it out of the gravel.
fair. Well, it wasn't raining. So Yuki got 10-second penalty, and that 10-second penalty was deserved. So then when he went to serve that penalty in the pits, a Red Bull mechanic touched his car, which meant that nullified that 10-second penalty. And guess what? Yuki got another 10-second penalty. So Laura Mackies, as a team principal of Red Bull, again took the blame and saying it was the mechanic's fault. We get it, we can see it, but how can every team fault happen to fall on Yuki? Again, obviously better on Yuki than Max, but it seems that it's not that they are not even focusing on Yuki. They're really being neglectful. And I just think it's just not a good look. And we constantly talk about the fact that we don't think McLaren is treating Oscar Piastri the same way that they do Lando Norris. However, it's nothing compared how you see a clear second driver in Red Bull is being treated. And now it makes sense why Mark Webber has PTSD from his time as Red Bull second driver and is determined that this treatment will never happen to Oscar. And I also want to say that I think we tended to blame Christian Horner for the toxic environment at Red Bull. But I think this mentality of treating their second driver as a complete non-entity extends beyond Christian.
I agree. It seems like Laurent Mekies is taking that philosophy and continuing the charge. I could not imagine how horrible that must feel for Yuki.
Well, that's why he looked dejected. And by the way, I mean, I think he enjoyed the driver's parade, but if you notice, he was also like was the one who's was struggling with the wind the most. So I'm not sure he was having the best time. Although I love the fact, and just want to give him something, that after he gave George Russell a ride back, he put a Red Bull cap on George Russell, and George Russell did not immediately realize it. So that was very, I thought it was very funny.
Yuki the prankster. I wish I paid attention to what lap. I did see Yuki Tsunoda clock one of the purple alarms for a fastest lap in the Grand Prix. So at least he had some success.
I just wanted to check because I was pretty sure that Albon got the fastest lap, but I maybe it was Yuki.
At one, no. I mean, I'm not saying he didn't hold it, but
Oh, okay.
you know how it
Gotcha.
changes? Yuki didn't
Yes.
hold it, but it changes throughout the race. At one
Yes.
point, Yuki held fastest lap. And I do think you're right. At the very end, I think Albon had it overall, but throughout the race, I saw Yuki get it once.
Yeah. Fair.
So he had some pace.
Yeah, so speaking of pace or lack thereof, do you want to talk about Ferrari or should we just wait until we get to the words of wisdom and
Oh,
one of the most insane quotes ever has to be dissected?
let's wait for Ferrari. That is its own can of worms for this race. But I will say the midfield gave some really exciting battles and performances. So do you want to kick it off with Williams?
If we must. So they were the highlight of the driver's parade, but I think that was the highlight of the weekend too. So there's no sugarcoating. They had a bad weekend. Obviously worse for Sainz than Albon, but neither car got into Q3 in both sprint and qualifying. In fact, sprint qualifying was atrocious for Sainz because he ended up 20th and he blamed the team for, I wasn't sure. Because he set a time, so did he? They not send him at the right time? He didn't have time to do one final lap. Not sure, but he was raging. But Albon didn't make it out of SQ2 or Q2, so was not flying either. And in terms of regular qualifying, why I thought that was more surprising? Did you know that seven teams made it into Q3, including an Alpine? And you're telling me none of those teams are Williams?
I looked at the lineup when I saw Q3, and there were what, four,
Seven teams.
five rookies? Like the amount
There
of
were four
rookies.
rookies, so yeah.
Yes, it was wild to me that there were four rookies and no Max Verstappen and no Lewis Hamilton. I
Well, that's what I'm
was like,
saying,
what
right?
world are we living in right now? This
So
is
it
nuts.
the time when neither Hamilton nor well, Verstappen was more shocking, by the way, just for the shock of it, his P16 was, I mean, this is I think says more about him than anything else, was the only time ever that he qualified that poorly just based on performance. Because
Right.
usually it was either he took a penalty or there was something wrong with his engine. But this is the first time he went out
Had
in
no pace.
Q1
That car had
without no
no
pace.
pace.
Right. So that was shocking. So you would think, okay, so two of the people we expect to be in top 10 are not there. So obviously at least one Williams makes it. Nope. One of the reasons for Sainz maybe starting the weekend on the wrong foot could be because he was not feeling well on Thursday. He was excused from media duties and he claimed to still having issues on Friday. But I think the car just was not doing well. And I feel bad for Albon because he was the one who ended up in the Ollie Bearman honorary spot of P11 in the race.
He was so close. At one point, they were both in the points, and then they weren't.
I think they were pitted at the wrong time because I'm not sure.
Complete wrong
Again,
time. Yeah.
I wasn't paying much attention, but one of them was pitted way too early. The other one was way too late. I think it was Albon who was too late. It's kind of the story of his life. And one thing I have to say about Sainz, he is the only beneficiary, if you want to call it that, of the beginning of the race where FIA was investigating so many incidents and giving out penalties seemingly for everything. He's the only one who didn't get his penalty for colliding with Hamilton.
Which I have my own thoughts on that one. But we can move on to Racing Bulls because the sprint was disappointing for both drivers. Lawson, he was again at the back of the grid, and Hadjar, went from P9 to sprint qualifying to P10, both outside of the points. Lawson collided with Bearman and received a 5 second penalty and a penalty point. So he now has seven. And then everything got turned around in the race. It was both of them qualifying in the top 10, Hadjar qualifying P5, Lawson P7. I was So surprised. And then, unfortunately for Hadjar, he lost positions in the race and was only able to recover to P8. And Lawson finished ahead of him at P7 and showed that a one-stop strategy could work. And I was so surprised how long he went on his tires.
Yeah,
But
I think they said it was, he went over 30 laps, right, on
yeah,
soft
it
tires.
was an insane amount of laps on his tires. So kudos to him, I guess, for managing the tire degradation because that track is such a unique track for tires.
Is, but I actually feel like it's so interesting because remember how I always say, well, I say two things. One is teams should split strategy, especially if one of the cars is out of positions.
Right.
Hint, hint. Ferrari.
They still
But that's be actually, I think they did split the strategy because, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought Lewis did start on soft, right?
Don't remember. He might have. I feel like the
Yeah.
last couple of races they have split the
All right.
strategy, but that's not
But again, like
their
something.
strategic downfall.
You're right. And the other thing that I always cry, like, I always feel if I were a strategist, I would totally go for track position over having more pit stops, even if it gives you more of a tire advantage, just because how hard it is to overtake. Now, granted, the only person who's immune to that is Max Verstappen, which is why I think he had four pit stops, because that was like at least one too many.
He
And
starts from the pit lane, has four pit stops, and still ends up on the podium.
right. Yeah. Well, he's just like he is his own. The thing is, it's so interesting because I don't know if you had the same impression, but I felt like in the sprint it was really hard for drivers to overtake. Whereas in the race, for some reason, we saw so many overtakes. Like sometimes with like Hedger and Gasly kept changing
Yeah,
like
they did.
positions on the
Well,
same
maybe.
lap.
Maybe it was just, I don't know if it was camera angle or what, but the race definitely showed more overtakes than
No, I think
sprint.
there were more overtakes
Yeah.
than we've seen in the previous few races. But my point was that I think a lot of teams, because of the ability to overtake, went for, okay, let's get on newer tires and see what happens, or get on faster compounds and see what happens. And again, if you have a driver like Max, I don't think the difference is that much because he's just a really good driver.
Unless it
On
was
the
the
other
hard tires this weekend because they were horrendous.
Yeah, he got rid of them after lap one. That was his first tire change.
Right.
But Lawson, the caliber driver that he is, I think for him, track position is key. And so I do commend him. I know he might not woo you, but he
No,
did
I give
stick
him
in that
credit.
P7.
Yeah, I give him credit for managing
Okay.
the tires. Good for him.
Good for him. All right. Well, Aston Martin's trajectory this weekend was the opposite of what we normally celebrate. They had a great Friday qualifying in P5 for Alonso and P7 for Stroll. I mean, I don't think I should even mention who ended up P5 and P7. I think that's self-explanatory. But in the sprint, Alonso valiantly defended against the Ferraris, with Leclerc being able to overtake. Not that we saw that overtake, I have to say. So we saw him fighting for P5, and then the camera moved away, and when they moved back, look, he's P5. How did that happen? We don't know. But in any case, back to Alonso. He ended up in a respectable P6. And I think this is his punishment because he let Max pass since he said that he didn't want to interfere with his championship hunt. Well, that's what you get, Alonso, P6 for your troubles. Because I think if you fought with Max more, maybe he could have stayed P5. And then Lance Stroll, on the other hand, went the other way, ended up in P9, just outside the points. But in qualifying for the main race, they qualified in Q2, which for Lance Stroll is actually not that bad. But the race went nowhere. As we mentioned, Lance Stroll collided. Let us count. There was Yuki Tsunoda. There was Bartoletto. I don't know.
Auto.
Were there anyone else we didn't see? But surprisingly, he ended up P16, which I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not even the last place that finished. Yay. And Alonso ended up P14. So like a complete disintegration from the hope that we had on Friday.
Yeah, they looked like they were going to show stronger pace and performance than what they ended up doing. And it's really unfortunate because we had three cars retire, not finish. So that
So he
should have
was
helped
one.
them.
Yeah,
That
so I was
should
gonna
have
say they're
helped.
not P17. Yay.
Well,
Wow.
Haas Oh,
where your
yes.
boy Ollie Bierman, they had an anonymous sprint qualifying. They moved up,
Yep.
not enough to get points. Ocon ended up ahead of Bierman, but that was because Bierman collided with Lawson, and that cost him points and a penalty and a penalty point. So now Bierman has 9 penalty points that will not come off until May of 26.
Yay.
I know. But then you want to talk about regular race
Yes.
qualifying for
Oh my
Bierman?
God.
Because that was so exciting.
That was exciting. And he was the start of qualifying for me because every session until Q3, he ended up in the top row or in top three. So his eventual place of P8 was a little bit disappointing, but it was so exciting to watch because you can feel the excitement of everyone. I'm assuming who was watching or commentating that could this be? Who could he actually be in the top row? And he didn't disappoint in the race. He redeemed himself and ended up in P6. So obviously did not reach the heights of last race where he ended up in P4, but I thought this was a great performance, especially after the sprint. And he started the race next to Liam Lawson. So the fact that they did not collide, I call that a win. And then Esteban Ocon, he ended up in P12 after again going out in Q1. I actually have nothing else to say. I thought he would come alive for and in Brazil, but since it didn't happen, I don't know what to expect of him for the end of the year. He's kind of a disappointment.
I'd agree with that. I thought he'd have a little more performance in Brazil. And on the other side of that, because he and Gasly were both on the podium last year with Alpine, Gasly came alive.
He did.
Yeah, he managed to grab last point positions in the sprint and the race. He qualified in the main race in the top 10. I can't even remember the last time he was in the top 10.
Before summer break, for sure.
It's definitely been a while. And then Colapinto, unfortunately, had a very memorable crash in the sprint. Same turn that both Piastri and Hülkenberg crashed out. He did not qualify well in the race and then ended up P15. Now that his contract extension is signed, we were hoping that we would see better performance for him from him. So hopefully Las Vegas is a little bit better for him.
I hope so too. And I just want to add, this is why the fact that Bortoleto did not mention his mechanics for thanking him for rebuilding the car stood out, is because Colapinto more than once mentioned how grateful he is that his car was able to be rebuilt for the qualifying.
Well, then definitely shame on Bortoleto because the fact that there's even a potential of him participating in qualifying was so commendable, and the hard work that those mechanics would have had to put in.
Exactly, since it was his fault that he crashed in the sprint. Nobody ran into him. He ran over a curb that had water and
I know, it's like the
that.
banana peels in Mario Kart, but he also had his DRS open. Which is what happened with Doohan earlier when he had that really bad crash.
Yeah, that one was even less of an excuse because there was no water.
Right. But Hülkenberg, you want to talk about Sauber?
We've mentioned Bortoleto a lot, but for Hülkenberg, I think with one exception in the sprint, he had a stellar weekend. He qualified in SQ3 and Q3, and this was his first qualifying in Q3 of the year. And this is the man who stood on a podium.
Yes, it's still wild to me that he did not make it to Q3 until this race and yet
I
has
know.
been on the podium. And Hamilton has not. It's
Yeah,
very
it's.
hard for me.
It's a bizarre year. But he ended up in P9 in the race, which I thought was very good. And he was also, you know why it was memorable? He did a one-stop strategy. See?
Yeah,
Track position sometimes works.
it does.
So, yeah, the only thing is the sprint when he went off in the same turn for the same reason as Piastri Colapinto, but it's a sprint. So, if it had to happen of between the two races, sprint is where you should get all your mistakes out of the way.
Agreed. So lots to talk about. No words of wisdom. You want to jump into
Oh,
it? All right, well, there's a lot coming on the Ferrari front. So we'll start with Charles Leclerc and we'll start with the most playful first. So, of course, his engagement was the big topic during the media session on Thursday. And so he was asked, which driver do you think will be next to get engaged? And Leclerc said, easy, Pierre. I think Pierre. I need to put him under a bit of pressure. We grew up together, so you're next. I don't get the logic then. They grew up together, so he's next. But way to go, Leclerc. Now Pierre is under the gun.
I guarantee you, Carlos Sainz is so happy he didn't say his name.
I almost actually, it's so funny because I thought when he refused to participate in Thursday media sessions because he didn't want to get this question.
Didn't even think about that, but I would not be shocked.
So another thing that Charles Leclerc said about the, again, tiny or mini car driver's parade. This is the best thing. We need it every race. And I agree.
Those and the Lego cars have been the best driver's parades.
They have, and the drivers love them. So, I mean, I think the tiny mini cars are probably cheaper and faster to make than Lego cars, but some kind of version of this has to happen more often.
They're definitely less man hours to produce.
For sure. Okay, so this is the quote that Leclerc said about his incident, which saw him being out of the race. Kimi sees that there's Piastri and doesn't give him any room at all. Oscar was optimistic, but I think Kimi could have avoided it. I don't think Oscar deserved all the blame there. But anyway, that doesn't matter for me. It's ultra frustrating. I could not agree with him more. So the collision happened because Oscar Piastri was trying to pass Kimi Antonelli on the inside. Charles Leclerc was trying to make a move on the outside. Now, I have to say, Leclerc gave, like, between Leclerc and Antonelli, there was a lot of room. Between Antonelli and Oscar, there wasn't a lot of room. However, Oscar never wavered from his line. He kept going the same line that he took. So then Kimi had an option. He had two cars. And if he veered closer to Oscar, he could hit him. If he veered the other way, he could hit Leclerc, or he could slow down and end up fourth. So what Kimi did is he turned into Oscar. They collided. Well, they touched. He drifted into Leclerc, and that was the end of the Leclerc's race. I still call it, again, it's most likely a racing incident, as painful as that seems to me. But I feel like Kimi had a very bad restart. Rolling restart after the safety car, and instead of fighting another day, decided to stand his ground, and that's what happened. How do you see it?
The same way. I truly believe Oscar should not have received the penalty that he did. I think if anyone was going to get a penalty, Kimi should have carried some of that responsibility or just chalk it up to what it was, a racing incident. But the fact that McLaren did not contest or defend or make an appeal to back Oscar on it was extremely disappointing to me.
It is. I mean, I don't think they've ever appealed anything, but they, Sky Sports actually asked for their comment and they said that they could see both sides. I'm sorry, what? What
No,
both
that's not a
sides?
response when you're protecting your driver.
Exactly. You have a driver. You have to see it from his point of view. I can tell you that Mercedes saw it from Kimi's side, and Kimi kept saying it was all Oscar of right after the race.
It was
So
not all Oscar. That's
exactly.
a immature response.
Well, I think it's a very selfish response.
It
And
is.
I think in this case they all should be selfish and McLaren should be on Oscar's
Defense.
side.
I think they should come to his defense.
They should come to the defense. So it was
Yeah.
very disappointing that they didn't. Just to add more fuel to the fire. So in the cool down room, there was this exchange when they showed the incident happening. So Max said, "Oh my God," and he really held the D. Kimi was like chirping, explaining what happened, and Lando goes, "You've taken out Charles," and Kimi goes, "Yeah, poor guy." But the way that Kimi said it was very flippant, and I didn't appreciate it. And I have to say, of the three of them, the one who was shocked the most and actually seemed to genuinely care was Max.
Well, That is his cutie patootie.
It was the only cutie patootie moment of the weekend. So yes, it was. Then we come to Lewis Hamilton's quotes. Hold on, Aaron. They get progressively
Oh, there's so
depressing.
many. There's so many. God, this
So
was such a tough weekend.
it was so this was his kind of being first philosophical. I mean, he had a longer quote, but I think the one part of it I think was memorable was when he said, "Rome wasn't built in a day." Okay, we're gonna give him time and see how far he can progress. Then there were rumors last week about what if his contract ends in 2026? Could they get Bierman into the car? And so he said, "I mean, I have a pretty long contract, so I'm a little bit far from negotiating a new deal right now." Okay, good. So he's planning a long-term future. Then this is what he said about FIA. Now he said it about his penalty from last week, but it could apply to penalty from this week or pick a week and his penalty. I don't know if they're aware of the weight of their decisions. They ultimately steer careers and can decide the results of championships, as you've seen in the past.
I
And that
do
is,
think they're aware.
well, I don't think they care. Like
They
whether they're
don't
aware
care,
and
but I
they
do
just
think
threw the
they're
decision.
aware.
Well, that's even worse. Then that's
Well, I think so
deliberate
because,
disregard.
well, I mean, think about what they did with Piastri's penalty. They didn't need to give him a 10-second penalty because they knew that would have a big impact on his championship run.
No, but I think in this one, they weren't really thinking about his championship run. They were thinking about, oh my God, somebody, the consequences, somebody's race was ended, and it was a Ferrari. And obviously, we're going to penalize to death Lewis Hamilton. So the other Ferrari driver that we never penalized is now out of the race. We have to penalize somebody for it. Like, that's how I think their thinking was. Like, it wasn't as strategic as, well, we're going to give him a penalty, and that means he will never get close. It's the consequence of it, but I don't know if it's really the thinking. Another thing is another radio message punctuating the wonderful miscommunication at Ferrari. So Lewis Hamilton goes, "I got a puncture or some damage." His engineer, Ricky Andami, goes, "No puncture and car's okay for now." It wasn't
There's no
okay.
way. There was so
It's
much floor
not okay.
damage. It was not
It's not
okay.
okay.
Not
It's
okay.
not okay. Should
I
not have
don't
said
know
that.
what stats or data the
Oh my God.
engineer was looking
If
up. The
you
car was
listen,
definitely not okay.
not only that, but you know how Ferrari has this. The meme of them always saying we're checking. This is the time when he should have said we're checking. This is
Correct.
not the time to say the car is okay. It's not okay.
Right.
And finally, just describing his year in Ferrari, he just said, "This is a nightmare I've been living in for a while."
Now, the context around this one, I think, also helps too, because he talks about how much progress that they've made, but they still can't get it right during the race.
Yes, definitely. And I wanted to include the context, but then this quote happened. And so I
Oh,
thought we
yeah.
should devote more time to this. So this is John Elkann, the CEO, president of Ferrari. I'm just going to read it first and then we can dissect it because it is so maddening. So this
I
is what
was
he
so
said.
infuriated when I saw this.
Brazil was a big disappointment. If we look at the Formula One championship, we can say that we have the mechanics who are winning the championship with the performance and everything that was done on the pit stop. If we look at our engineers, there's no doubt that the machine has improved. If we look at the rest, it's not up to par. And surely we have drivers that it is important that they concentrate on driving and that they talk less because we still have important races ahead of us and it is not impossible to get second place. In Bahrain, we owned the World Endurance Championship title. When Ferrari is united, you get results. So much to unpack here. So he's equating other championships, and yes, during the weekend, Ferrari won both the Drivers' and Constructors' Championship in the World Endurance Championship, which is not the same or as prestigious as Formula One.
No, it's not. Not even close. That
And
is
so,
apples and oranges.
correct. So he's praising the engineers, he's praising the mechanics, and I'm not saying they're not great. Might not be the best, but not great. But then he totally turns around and puts all the blames on the drivers. And I just want to say, if you look at Brazil, what could have Leclerc done better? He never blamed the car because he was taken out by another driver of another car. He qualified in P3, where Martin Brundle, who is a trusted voice, I think, right? He said that car did not belong in P3. So your driver puts the car where it doesn't belong, gets taken out, no fault of his own, and now he's the problem. I have no words.
What's disappointing is Ferrari is such a big brand. They're on a pedestal for drivers, for fans. But you know, the reality is they have not performed or won a championship since what, 07?
So drivers
10?
2007, no, constructors 2008. You're giving him way too
Okay.
much credit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when he says when Ferrari is united, you get results, clearly Ferrari has not been united because they have not produced results since 2007 and 2008. This is the president of Ferrari. Shame on him for his leadership because this is not how you motivate or unify a team and drivers. This is one of the most respected global brands, and that's what you're going to say about your drivers. Shame on him.
But I don't understand, like, it cannot be off the hot cuff. I feel there's more calculation behind it. I just don't understand. Because, by the way, it was Alcon who wanted Lewis Hamilton in Ferrari. He was the driving force to make it happen. And part of the reason is that the Nepo baby that he is, he kind of drove a lot of the brands that are under his stewardship to the ground. And so he needed a PR boost, a marketing boost, a value boost, and Lewis
Yeah, he
Hamilton
got
gave
it
him
with him.
them.
He got it with Hamilton and then some.
Right. So we're not even a year into that relationship. Again, Alcon was the big motivator for it. And he's basically lashing out. And I'm sorry, that is not a good look.
No, it's not
If
because
you want to parade as a united front, you present a united front. You do not put out your drivers and basically lambast them publicly. Like, I don't know what this will get them except for those drivers to leave.
well, and Hamilton is a officially a 7-time world champion.
Yep.
He was with Mercedes. They won the constructors 8 times.
Yep.
Clearly, he knows what it takes and what the winning formula is, and is trying to get Ferrari to get up and back to that level of performance. I feel like him and Leclerc's been fighting this uphill battle before Hamilton got there. It is an uphill battle that they will not win if you have the CEO taking this approach. I can't imagine what it's like for Fred.
I mean, I don't either because the one name or the one position he did not mention was Fred. I mean, team principal. So I'm a little confused where does he fall in this equation? Because
I don't know,
mechanics,
because even
yay.
the team
Engineers,
principal,
yay.
yeah, no comment on team principal, but let me
Yeah.
bash my drivers.
Right. So I don't think he, personally, I don't think Fred would endorse that treatment of drivers. Because again, I think what Alcon should have said is looking at how successful we are in the World Endurance Championship, let us step back, see what takeaways we can bring into Formula One that makes us successful in Formula One. Why couldn't he have said that?
Or,
That's not throwing anyone under the bus. That's
no.
showing, yes, we could win in one series. Let's see if
How
anything
we
we
can
can
apply
use.
it to the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. Like, it seems like it was very targeting. And it's interesting because I have read like a discussion somewhere where his reference to talk less. Obviously, he doesn't want the drivers to denigrate the car. But when have they done that? I
They
have to,
haven't.
like, I mean, yes, they say that, like, you know, the performance is not there. We can't unlock. I mean, I know Fred Vasseur is very good at constantly saying there's more potential in the car, which I always think is oversimplification. But okay. So the car's streaky, whatever. But he has to remember that FIA requires drivers to constantly be available for the media. They're
Right.
constantly being asked questions. I'm surprised they haven't talked more about how crappy this car is
I think
than
they've
they've
been
already
pretty
have.
diplomatic in their responses and measured for the most part.
For the most part, yeah. Like, unless you want Lance Stroll answers, which are basically yes, no. Like, they're gonna say something that may not be overly complimentary. But I think they've been very much restrained. Max Verstappen, and we'll get to him in a moment, likes to talk about his car way more in much more derogatory terms during every weekend, even when he's doing well.
I know his radios are something special. So, can we
Yeah.
talk about the radio that GP gave him?
Yeah, that was my favorite, I have to say. So this, I think it's very good. It means that this race was good because we don't have, I don't have as many memorable radio moments as I usually do. But this was great. I believe this was in the sprint. And so Max was just constantly going off how everything is horrible, the balance is horrible, and GP kept saying like, "We'll give you a recommendation because your turn one wasn't working and this wasn't working." And he again, "I have no grip, I have no balance. Basically, the car is horrible, right?" So then GP comes up with this nugget: "We are giving you recommendations so you avoid oversteering into the corner every lap, Max. Whether you take them or not is up to you." Like, I love the stern tone. I love enough information. As usual, he's great at giving you just enough information, but also very clear. I'm not taking anything, any lip from you. I'm giving you the best I have. You take it or you leave it.
I loved it. I think it just shows how strong their relationship is.
Exactly. Speaking of Max, this was interesting. This is something that George Russell said before the race, and I thought about their relationship. So, one, I think, is just a good glimpse of what it is. And second, I think gives a little more credence to one of our conspiracy theories. So the first thing he said is about, again, his relationship with Max. We just say hello to each other. We don't speak, but we don't ignore each other. I don't lose sleep over it. And for sure, he doesn't lose sleep over it. So it doesn't bother me one single bit. I think that tracks.
Yeah,
That's how
especially
I think.
based on their body language of sharing the back of the mini car.
Yeah, actually, they were kind of laughing with each other. But again, it's like very
Cordial.
standoffish.
It's
Yeah,
cordial.
cordial, but like, you know,
That's about
you
it.
stay on your end or second one. So do you remember? And we've brought it up a few times when during one of our Drive to Survive episode reviews, we noted that Russell said that there are some drivers who go out partying and drinking before the race, and Norris was showing that it wasn't him, and George Russell confirmed it wasn't him. And then at the time, you and I thought it's either Alonso or possibly he's referring to Max, although that probably is not true, but he's probably stirring up drama. So this is what he said in an interview with Max next to him. Max is a pro racing driver, pro FIFA player, paddle player, drinker, you know, a man of many talents.
I love
Aaron, thoughts?
it. I mean, there after his performance in Brazil last year and this year, there's nothing to disagree with there.
Well, I just like the pro drinker part. Like,
Oh
that
yeah.
was a
Oh.
dig. That was a dig. He's been like doing these drinking digs at Max for quite a while. For now, Max is taking it with a grain of salt. So, can we talk about McLaren? Because we have a lot of words of wisdom. One comes from Jos Verstappen, our least favorite father, and I would
Oh, yeah.
say sarcastically father of the year, because when he saw Max's qualifying lap that put him in P16, he left the garage.
Yeah, that did not go unnoticed.
Yeah. So this is what Jos Verstappen talked about, said about Piastri. "I find what's happening at McLaren quite strange. Piastri hasn't suddenly forgotten how to drive, has he? If I were him or his manager, I would bang my fist on the table internally, because now everyone is wondering if he can handle the pressure, and that's not good for your own name." Interesting. Of course, he would start with something physical because that's just the way he is. But is he wrong in wondering if McLaren is sabotaging Piastri? Just for the sake of completeness, this is what Piastri responded. "We can stand up for ourselves, and I feel very comfortable doing that."
Good for him.
Yeah. So there were a lot of other quotes I could have used, but unfortunately, with the lead going way into Lando's favor, some of them just no longer make sense. But these are the quotes that Zak Brown and Andrea Stella said about the treatment of both drivers. Zak Brown: "If two th 2007 happens again. And just to clarify, for 2007, Alonso and Hamilton were going at it for the championship, and Kimi Raikkonen managed to sneak in and win by 1 point. I'd rather have that outcome than any other that involves playing favorites. We won't do it. And Andrea Stella said, "It's like when you have two sons and somebody says, 'Which one is your preferred son?' They're my two sons. How can you say which one is the preferred one?" I mean, as sweet as that is, and Aaron, as a mother of two sons, maybe you feel the same way. They're not his two sons. They're his
No,
employees.
they're his employees. It's different because with two sons, it is true. You love them the same but different. However, I call bullshit on Zach Brown and Stella because they have, in my opinion, clearly favored us the entire season.
Well, that's the thing, because Zach, as a CEO, probably has more pull than Andrea Stella. And I think everyone knows he prefers Norris because he has more history with him. He's been involved with him even before he was in McLaren. So that is almost understandable. Andrea Stella behind the scenes is said to like Piastri more, but how much power does he really have?
At the end of the day,
And
I don't think he does. I think it's Zach Brown.
exactly. So maybe he feels that he's being fair, but I kind of feel it's definitely
It's
skewing Lando's
biased.
way.
Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely.
And so with that, I just want to add Ralf Schumacher into this because why not?
Why not?
And he said that if Piastri is looking for a new team, Aston Martin could be an option. That's not the option that
Interesting.
I was considering, but what do you
No.
think?
I would not put Aston on Piastri's radar. But maybe it does make sense. I mean, he is a smart guy. Mark Webber is really smart. He sees whatever's going on at Ferrari. I mean, maybe Aston could be a good fit for Piastri.
But why would Austin want him? Like, I would think they would want other drivers before they get to him.
I don't know. Maybe Max is going to retire if he gets his fifth. He has a child. He's in other formulas. He could be
I
good.
mean, he has a child, but he's been racing everywhere outside of F1 even more than usual. So I don't
Yeah.
think that's necessarily what's going to stop
Maybe he
him.
retires from F1 and goes, into the endurance side of things. Who knows? He wants to
It's
do Le
all possible.
Mans, he said in an interview. Like, he wants to do the big ones. I don't know.
Well, listen, World Endurance Championship was won by Ferrari, and one of the drivers who won the Drivers' Championship is Antonio Giovinazzi. Now, we may not remember him because Drive to Survive focused very little on
Oh, I
him,
do.
but he was not very memorable and he was not that good. So if he could win 24 Hours of Le Mans and World Endurance Championship, I think for Max, it'll be just
A
as easy.
no-brainer. Yeah. I
Exactly.
mean, that would be like him starting from lot C and still landing on a podium in a F1 Grand Prix,
Absolutely.
which I would not put past him. But let's spill the grid because there was a lot that happened. Franco Colapinto officially confirmed as the full-time driver for Alpine in 2026. Jack Doohan is currently in Japan exploring opportunities to get a seat in the Japanese Super Formula Championship.
I just always feel sorry for Jack Doohan and
I do
his
too. That was so
failed experiment.
unfortunate. Yeah. And we would be remiss not to mention this after the Mexico Grand Prix, Ferrari are the official 2025 pit stop champions. They are holding an insurmountable lead, unlike McLaren in the World Constructor Championship.
Yeah, so that's what John Ocon referred to as they are the championship pit stop. Great.
Woohoo.
That, like, I would
That's
rather give that championship to McLaren to get a driver's championship, but okay.
no kidding. Same. And according to an Italian newspaper, Ferrari is considering George Russell should Leclerc or Hamilton leave the team in the coming years. Thoughts?
I actually don't hate it. Mostly because George Russell is a very, I think, political animal, right? Like,
Oh, yeah.
not for nothing, he is the head of the Drivers Association. So I see him, let's just say I see him more in Ferrari than Oscar Piastri. But
I would agree with that.
But I honestly think both Leclerc and Hamilton have to leave first before Ferrari will consider him.
Definitely. Kimi Antonelli had a very publicized outing visiting Ayrton Senna's grave, wearing his Adidas kit and backwards cap. He was also seen without the cap, reading a book about Senna's life in the cemetery. Do you believe this performance was a true tribute or completely staged?
It's almost like 50-50 because I think if we didn't see him reading the book about Senna's life, I would actually be on the side that it wasn't staged. But seeing him putting the graves on the putting the flower and flowers on the grave and then reading the book about Senna, like that doesn't seem right.
That's not natural to me.
No.
Like, you would read the book on the plane and then go and leave flowers and sit in quiet reflection if it were me.
Correct. And you would take off the cap.
Correct. You're at a grave. Like, show some respect.
So I think it's a PR star stunt that was not thought out very well.
I would not disagree with that. All right, IndyCar driver Pato Award suggests Colton Herta's move to F2 isn't just for super license points. He has a Formula One seat locked up for 2027.
Now, Aaron, do you think that's one of the catalog seats or somewhere else?
Cadillac would make sense, but it would be hard to replace both those drivers before actually seeing how they perform.
But maybe that's an addition. So
It
they're
could be.
auditioning Perez and Bottas, and whoever performs better stays, and the other one goes.
Could be. Could be. Or, I mean, do you have to, you would have to have a super license if you're going to be a reserve driver, correct?
Correct. And he doesn't have
So
one.
it could be, you know, they move him into a reserve position for Cadillac.
Maybe.
But
Again, this is pure
yeah, pure
speculation.
speculation. But I could see it.
I mean, it could be interesting, or it brings more tension, which I actually want Perez and Bottas to have a great experience. Can you imagine how much fun Bottas would have had at the tiny or mini car
Oh my gosh,
driver's parade?
he would have been phenomenal. I actually really loved his social media video he did with Mercedes about the weather leading into Brazil. And I saw where Perez did an interview. I guess they've been doing testing, and I don't know if it's on track or in a sim, but he says that he's been doing really well. So I think next year could be really exciting.
Absolutely.
And then Aston Martin's aerodynamics director, Eric Bladen, and seven senior staff members are set to leave the F1 project following the feedback from Adrian Newey and the new CTO, Enrico Cardiel, as the team refocuses resources under F1's cost cap. Some staff may stay within the wider Aston Martin group.
Oh, so Adrian Newey is getting
Making
to work.
moves.
Well,
Yes, he is.
it's interesting because I think we mentioned before that the cost cap for next year is actually increasing because due
Yes, thank
to
you,
completely
inflation.
new car. Yeah, or and new cars, right?
Yes.
So that's an interesting reason for why they have to get rid of seven people. But on the other hand, look, Aston Martin is one of the better funded teams, right?
Oh, yeah.
Haas is the leanest, the least invested team on the grid. Do you know that they're fighting for P7 in the constructors? And it's
Wild
possible
to
the
me.
Haas
Yeah.
will overtake them. So they have to do something.
Well, the way Ollie Bearman has been performing, I would expect them to overtake.
You never know when it's going to rain and Lance
Well,
Stroll
that's true.
becomes
I don't want to
alive.
jinx the rest of the season for Ollie or Haas, but it will be interesting. Speaking of later races in Qatar, Pirelli is set to enforce a cap on laps per tire set to avoid blowouts, which may result in at least two pit stops per driver.
So, Aaron, that was your suggestion, right? That they put a
It
cap.
was.
So we'll see how it works in Qatar.
Well, Qatar's an interesting one, just given the temperature and the track and the way that it's set up compared to a street circuit.
Exactly. And it's extremely brutal in the heat. So
Right.
obviously the tires can degrade faster. So
So much quicker.
I'm not sure, did anyone do one pit stop in previous races? I feel like it's always been a two stop.
I feel like it has been a two. I'd have to go back and look. I don't want to say the incorrect thing, but off the top of my head, I don't remember a one stop in Qatar.
Well, that's the thing, but I also think it's really good to have a lap limit
Limit,
because then
yeah.
you know, like let's say it's 45. I'm just throwing up numbers, like 45 laps, right? Like you cannot go beyond 45 laps. So
Well,
now it
that would be
becomes more
like for,
critical.
right, like softs, you can't go more than 20.
But people, like again, people can try, right? This
Well,
time, like
Lawson
there's no
did.
try.
I mean, you would basically cut down on what Lawson and a handful of others did
Exactly. But
in
what I'm saying is,
Brazil.
it's going to make strategy more important.
Oh, definitely.
Which case, I'm even more sure that Max is winning that one because,
Yeah,
yeah.
definitely.
Yeah.
And we had talked about it before. Formula One is considering three changes to the weekend format. Free practice during sprint weekends could include 15 extra minutes if a red flag occurs. I don't disagree with that.
I think that's good. It just makes sense.
Yeah, that one just makes sense. Q1 and Q2 may be extended by 1 or 2 minutes to account for the addition of Cadillac with two extra drivers. Again, I
Not
think it also
enough.
makes, I don't know if that's enough time.
No, because each lap is at least like, let's be generous, a minute and a half, right? And
Right.
then there's also you have to include the in lap and the out lap and two extra cars. So I would think they should extend them by at
Like
least
four to
3 minutes.
5 minutes?
Oh,
I'd
that's
say,
too much to ask. But
well.
one or two is, I don't think that's sufficient. So I'm not sure that's going to make big difference. But again, makes sense conceptually.
Yeah. And a standard race duration ensuring all Grand Prix run for the same total time. I think
I'm
that's
not
going to
for
be
it.
tricky. I am not for that one.
No, I agree that it should be the same distance, which is why we have different laps. Meaning some circuits that are longer have 50 laps,
Right.
some circuits that are shorter have 70 laps. But I don't think you have to, like, why do we have to have the same duration? Does it mean that you're going to stop if we're on lap 65 and
Six.
there's a
Yeah.
battle going on?
Yeah, no, that's terrible. But I don't know. I did see a story floating around that I actually liked, and I'm going to try to figure out how we can try to win this, Ina. Did you see that Heineken is giving away a pass where you and a friend would win access to every Grand Prix for the year, and it would include hotel and flights?
No, but oh my
Yes.
God, we
So
have to
there,
enter.
I know. So there is, I forget the guy's name, but he did that this year on his own dime, own budget, and only on annual leave. And so Heineken caught wind of it. And so they are partnering to give away an annual F1 pass for two. So the winner and a plus one to go to every race of the season, plus hotel and flights.
That's
Way to
amazing.
go, Heineken.
I love it, but are they only giving out one pass?
One pass.
Ugh. The chances are just
So
astronomical,
slim.
but I
There is
love
a
the idea.
chance. I
There is a
love the
chance.
idea. I think it's so cool.
Very cool.
And finally, they released the 2026 calendar. Imola is not on it.
We knew that,
I
and I
know.
think.
Still hard to see that it officially is not on the calendar.
I'm just more baffled by the sprints because we're not going to have a Brazil sprint. We're going to have a Singapore sprint, which I don't feel is going to be interesting.
No.
And that's too bad because, again, Brazil is awesome. And
Brazil produces so much.
in this race, there was no rain, and it was still as exciting as last year when there was torrential rain.
I know.
So it doesn't matter. It's still good.
Exactly.
The last Brazilian Grand Prix weekend featuring a sprint is behind us and left an indelible memory. Both sprint qualifying and Grand Prix qualifying sessions were filled with nail-biting suspense, different tire choices and pit stop strategies, and battles that came down to the wire or the last flying lap. The sprint gave us crashes, storylines, and penalties to ponder, while the race produced enough heartbreaks, exhilarating moments, and another drive for the ages, with a sprinkle of debatable penalties for Drive to Survive to fill several episodes. Every driver whom we support needs a reset as the last triple header barrels towards the finale, which may not give us the title fight that goes down to the last second, but may still produce heroics, excitement, and controversies that will last us until the next season.
I know, it's hard to believe we're under a month before this season wraps up. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
Would also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your tiny car or mini car enthusiasts. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.